Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So if our last guest, Robert Blecker, was concerned with punishment that's perversely lenient in his view for the worst offenders, my next guest is looking at punishment that perversely is severe for those who have served their time but are blocked from ever really rejoining society. Kai Wright is the editorial director of Color Lines and a Nation magazine contributor, where his article Boxed In, How a Criminal Record Keeps You Unemployed for Life, now appears. Hey, Kai, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So the term ban the box got new attention when Target changed its policy recently and dropped its use. Tell us what the box is.
The box is the question that appears on, I think the recent survey said 92% of employers ask, do you have a criminal record? It's a box. You have to check yes or no. And the concern is that there is an automatic sorting based on a yes answer that is impacting a huge number of would-be workers. That's getting them out of the application pool before they can ever start to qualify for the job.
Target's home state, Minnesota, passed legislation to ban that question. So then Target decided to make it the company's national policy. Is it still a standard practice for most companies?
It is. Again, the most recent research shows 92% of large employers are asking about criminal records. And I think there are two really important things to know about this that came up for me in reporting it. One is we're talking about a huge population of people. I think 2007 was the last number where 3.2% of the U.S. population in 2007 was incarcerated. Something like 30%, we can't tell exactly how many, but something like 30% of people in the country have a criminal record. That's a huge swath of would-be workers who are impacted by this. And secondly, research seems to suggest that an enormous number of employers are in fact violating federal civil rights laws in the way in which they apply the information they get when you check that box yes.
Uh-huh. Because it's actually a Civil Rights Act violation,
That's correct.
I understand it correctly, to use criminal record as an automatic disqualifier for employment. You can use it as a factor.
That's correct.
But if you use it as the factor, then that violates the Civil Rights Act.
That's correct. Because the Civil Rights Act not only bans bias explicitly, I won't hire black people, obviously, that's bad, right? But it also bans policies that amount to I won't hire black people. And given the racial disparity in the number of people who have criminal records, it amounts to a ban on hiring black folks.
And I'm sure employers can get away easily with using it as the disqualifier. They just don't tell the applicant,
sure,
oh, I disqualified you because you once spent time in prison.
Sure. I mean, these are the stories that I heard time and time again in reporting the article, talking to ex-offenders, talking to job placement programs that work with them. It is it's really quite widespread.
So what are you proposing? Is it to ban the box nationwide?
I think so. There's a strong movement around banning the box, and I think there's 10 states, I think, the number that has done it. But it's also, you know, employers just need to follow the law. You know, I mean, if we're talking about a concern around criminality, the law is clear. You have to deal with applicants as actual individuals. You cannot have categorical bans on people on groups of people. And part of it is that's because like other biases, there is a huge gap between perception and reality. Right. There are the actual risk of recidivism is quite low. The research shows overwhelmingly that once you get to 7 years after the crime, there's zero higher likelihood that person will commit a crime than someone who never did. And it starts to drop off within a year dramatically. So this is an uninformed bias that leads to a bias. Yeah, seriously. So just follow the law is really the question.
So listeners, if you have a criminal record and it has ever affected your ability to get a job, call up and tell us your story. Or even if you've been able to get a job, call up and tell us how you have had to deal with your criminal record, the fact that you have a criminal record in job interviews or in general in job applications. Or are you an employer? How do you or how does your company handle criminal histories in hiring? Can you deal with it in a nuanced way? And if so, how? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And let's take a call right now from Mike in the Bronx. Hi, Mike. You're on WNYC.
Hi. There's so many dimensions to this. When I was a federal prisoner, and when I came out, the supervisor from the Department of Justice said, lie, don't tell them that you were a criminal. But what New York City, if you want a job, and I applied for a train operator, and I waited 4 years to be called, only to, you know, as, when we got to the part of a criminal paperwork, I handed my paperwork in. They said, wait here. 2 minutes later, they came out and said, go home.
Meaning you did lie, but they caught you?
No, I didn't lie. They looked at the paperwork, came back out and said, go home. And then they sent me a letter saying, there's three choices, and the worst one is to be kicked off the list permanently. That's what they did. They took the most severe thing. So I worked for Joe Loda, who was running the MTA, and I wrote him an email. And they came back and they sent me another letter rejecting me, you know. And so it doesn't matter. They just I was 319 out of 11,000 on the list, so I'm qualified.
Did you want to ask him a question, Kai?
Well, I mean, his experience isn't unheard of. There are a huge number of occupations in which law, so setting aside the EEOC's guidance, but in which either state, local, or federal law has said, hey, you can't hold that job if you have a record. And transportation is one of them. Now there's details, and I don't know the details of the MTA's policy, but the transportation sector is one of the ones where a huge number of people following 9/11 could no longer work in transportation.
So maybe if you had a drug conviction, for example, and then you were applying to be a train engineer, that would knock you out. I don't know if that's the particular.
Well, but that's the kind of thing that's part of what's important here is that the EEOC's guidance is that you cannot hold someone accountable in their job application for a crime that has nothing to do with the job, and so the vast majority, when we look in New York City in particular, when we talk about the arrests and number of people who have records, the vast majority of them are frankly marijuana possession. And that has nothing to do with operating a train. But, well, I mean, I guess you could say that there's a risk of drug use, but you can drug test.
And in a way, now we're getting to it, aren't we? That so many people have criminal records in the United States for low levels of marijuana possession or selling, but certainly for possession. And that winds up hampering their ability to get work with very, very little, if any, relevance to their qualifications.
Yeah, and I mean, and particularly in New York City, it's quite striking as a consequence of, you know, more than a decade of stop and frisk and policies that have led to a lot of young men, particularly young and black and Latino men, as we know from the data, having marijuana possession arrests on their records. And it's when you look at that, it starts to give you some insight into how we end up with these kind of alarming stats when we see that 1 in 4 black men under 25 actually have a job.
Martha in Westchester, you're on WNYC with Kai Wright from Color Lines and The Nation. Hi.
Hi.
Go ahead.
So I worked at a big accounting firm, one of the four major public accounting firms, in their background investigation department, and we would review applications for individuals who reported having criminal records. And they were actually, by the time we got all of the court documents and verified their identity, were often already employees. So we would have to kind of deal with another set of legal rules around firing employees that with criminal backgrounds. So I actually don't see how employers can verify that any criminal activity that someone checked yes to, whether or not it actually is the person and whether or not it's relevant to their job, like within the time that they even make the decision to hire them. Because it takes a while to do that.
Martha, did you guys use did you have a third party that you contracted out to use a private database to do those criminal checks, or did you do them yourself?
They did have a third party, but then they had another, a runner service that would actually go to the different cities or counties to collect the court documents to verify identity. Yeah. So that whole process takes a long time.
Well, one of the things that the EEOC has pointed out and others folks is that, so there was a massive explosion in the criminal background check industry following 9/11. And they maintain databases. Both there's an FBI database, and then there are the privately held databases, which are essentially the scrape of the FBI database. And what's clear is that the records themselves are wildly inaccurate. Something like in 2006, I think, is the year there was something like half of the records in the FBI database were up to date. So there are all these people that have been arrested but not convicted. They're in there. There are clerical errors. The EEOC sued Dollar General last year. One of the women in the suit got fired over a conviction that didn't even exist. It was a clerical error in the database.
Martha, thank you for your call and sharing your experience. Ben in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ben.
Hey, Brian. Big fan of the show. A little nervous calling in, but I'll tell my quick story, and it relates to a comment from earlier about low-level drug possession. I was 21 years old, arrested in my dorm room while attending a Northeastern college with a fancy name. I won't tell you which one. And I was lucky. It was a state where it wasn't a, quote, big deal, but it was an arrest. I pled no contest with the help of a lawyer, and I thought I was basically done with it. Over 10 years later, when I got a job with the Department of Education as a New York City public school teacher, it became an issue. I was brought in. I had to produce a paper trail, and I said to the lady, like, this is over 10 years old. There is no paper trail. The case has been expunged. I had to produce, with the help of the lawyer, evidence that there was no more evidence of the crime. It was sort of a Kafka-esque legal episode.
Catch 22. Isn't there a record of something being expunged?
Right. So there was a paper certificate that said there is no more evidence of this case. But just to think of how many young people who make the youthful indiscretions, like a former president named George Bush, like a current president named Barack Obama, these guys were lucky enough to make these youthful indiscretions, and it hasn't ruined their professional lives.
Not get caught and get a criminal record. It's a great point. Thank you. Lewis in Huntington, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lewis.
All right. Hi. Great fan, and listen every day.
Thank you.
Now, I don't want to misconstrue this, and I don't want anybody to think that I'm a mean guy. But as small businesses, there are a lot of costs associated with administration and so forth. And when you have high turnover, and I've had numerous businesses that have had high turnover, having that kind of box to check that you did have a criminal record with explanation, I think is a viable tool, because many times when we go and we process, there are enough candidates without criminal records that then we have to run reports on. I've been victimized with at least three businesses in the past by people who stole from me. They robbed me. They robbed the warehouses. They did all kinds of things. I didn't really have a policy in place, and I didn't really run background checks. But for small business, and you have to look at it wearing the small business shoe, that's a useful tool in various ways. Because like I said, if you did have a criminal record and you have an explanation, and I may like you, then I may, you know, surpass that. Look into the explanation. Otherwise, I need to filter out, you know, candidates who I feel may not be viable for my type of business.
You have any problem with the way Lewis is putting that?
Almost none. I think that part of it is exactly right, and it's what the law says do, is that you have to deal with individuals as individuals. You have to look at their specific case and say, hey, is this, as with any other area, and say, hey, is this somebody who will fit in my company? But if you have a categorical ban, part of the reason it's illegal is it is not making you safer as a business owner. Again, the data reflects that starting within a year after the crime, the likelihood of that person committing another crime falls off dramatically, and after 7 years, it doesn't exist at all. And in many cases, the databases are inaccurate. So you're not actually protecting yourself by this, by doing that. You're just committing bias. You protect yourself by having an actual look at the actual person.
You want to say one more thing, Lewis?
No. I stress my point, and yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your call and chiming in. I just want to get to one other thing with you, Kai, and that is that there have been these tests – that show that people are treated unequally on the basis of race with the same kind of criminal record. So these have been these tester cases where people with similar or nearly identical qualifications on paper, including in this case a kind of criminal record, go for a job interview, and there are whites going and there are blacks going, and then we see how many of them get called back for job interviews or second interviews or get the job, right?
Yeah. There's been a long history of these of where you send in an applicant, you send in a black and white applicant, coach them to be exactly the same, and see and we've seen over the years that the white applicant is much more likely to get a call back. One study, a woman, a researcher from Harvard University, Diva Pager, I think I'm probably mispronouncing her name, but she did a study back in 2003. So this is in the wake of the 2001 recession, to see what happens when you add criminal records to it. What she found was that 34, and she sent these applicants in New York City and Milwaukee. 34% of the white applicants with no criminal record got a call back. 17% of the white applicants with a criminal record got a call back. So we see a dramatic sorting amongst white applicants based on criminal record. Then 14% of the black applicants with no criminal record got a call back. So you see a dramatic sorting by race. There are few, you are sorted out as a black applicant with no criminal record.
You are more likely to get called back as a white applicant with a criminal record than a black applicant without a criminal record and the same other qualifications.
And then if you add a black applicant with a criminal record, it goes all the way down to 5% callbacks. And so you see this toxic mixing of these biases that lead to sorting of the applicant pool. And again, when you think about it from that perspective, you start to get answers to this mystery we've had of how do we have black unemployment at 13% still while the rest of the economy seems to be recovering? Why are we still at depression levels for unemployment for black people? This is one of the reasons.
Want to hear one more person's story? Let's try Barbara listening in Houston, Texas. Barbara, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. My grandson was charged, not convicted, but charged with the felony, and it was reduced to a misdemeanor. But when he goes to apply for a job, it still shows as a felony on his record. And I was wondering, what can be done about that?
I wish I could tell you. This is exactly the problem, is that these databases are just not kept up. They're not kept up. Even if you set everything else aside, the databases that people are using to check are not accurate. And all that can happen is that, you know, from a large structural perspective, EEOC is working, suing companies, discouraging them from using them. What an individual does in that situation, all you can do is try what the previous caller did, which was being able to use his ample resources to defend himself. But the law currently
and
leaves
you
on your
own. And if
you
don't have ample resources, hopefully there's a legal aid clinic or something like that that can help you get the right paperwork.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to need legal help. But in the end, the problem is that people are left out in this way.
Barbara, thank you, and good luck with your grandson. And Barbara's story goes directly to the title of the article in the November 25th issue of The Nation, Boxed In: When a Youthful Brush with the Law Means Being Shut Out of the Workforce Forever. The writer, Kai Wright, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, Kai, you're a critic of puppet governments, right? You don't like puppet regimes.
Yeah, who likes a puppet?
Well... Talk about a puppet regime. We will wish a happy 50th anniversary to the political theater troupe, the Bread and Puppet Theater, coming up next.